This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com. Allahu, 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 Allahu.
Welcome to Heart and Soul on QF Radio with me, Lauren Booth, your place to reflect. Finding a faith during your life is something of a surprising element to look at from the outside. My own conversion to Islam was painted by former colleagues in newspapers as a failure to cope with the normal ups and downs of daily life. It's sometimes seen that men in their 40s get Ferraris, women in the midlife get religion. Well, talking to me today about his own journey to Islam is the former jazz musician John Fontaine. John is from the UK, like myself, and he embraced Islam in 2008. He is author of Jesus and the Injil, another word for the Gospels. Welcome, John.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Talk to us first about your life before becoming a Muslim, because sometimes it can seem that you have to be really unhappy in order to be seeking something. Did you have this terrible unhappy life? Was there a calamity that befell you? Talk to us about who you were in your younger life.
Yeah, I hear this quite a lot, and a lot of people presume that I was that people who accept religion later on in life, that they were somehow searching for something. And I don't think I was. From a very young age, I used to go to church, and I always believed in something. I always believed in the concept of a creator. And growing up in church, sometimes it was a bit confusing because I didn't understand some of the concepts of Christianity. And through my teenage years, I kind of moved away from religion, but I still had this belief in a creator. And I was of the opinion that religion is more of, you know, more of a way of the elite have managed to actually control the masses. I thought religion is man-made, but I actually believe in a God. And so through my teenage years, I got a job in a club. And I ended up becoming a jazz singer from the age of 14 to around the age of 20, 21. I was actually singing in jazz clubs and cruise ships. And
can you tell us some of the talk us through some of the clubs that you appeared in and who you worked with?
Yeah, I mean, I actually sang in the Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club. It's a famous jazz club
there
in London.
I know it.
It has a lot of famous jazz musicians over there. I sang in the 606 Club in London as well. And these are like the two main jazz clubs, if not the two biggest well-known jazz clubs in the world. I also sang in cruise ships. I had my own show at Manchester United's ground with an 18-piece big band orchestra. So I was doing quite well in the jazz industry, and I also sang with Jamie Cullum's jazz band.
I
actually released a song which was produced by Ian Shaw, and this is my first original song. So I was actually working with the top guys in the jazz scene, really. By the age of 18, I'd managed to save quite a lot of money, but I'd not furthered my education onto university because I was actually busy in this dream, in this jazz dream, and I was kind of like, well, why do I need to go to university when I'm making a lot of money and doing a lot of, you know, on my jazz? So at the age of 18, with the wealth that I'd I started to do business in Africa, and I actually applied to study diamonds with De Beers in London. And actually, there's like a 5-year waiting list to actually get on the course, because De Beers only teach 4 people a year.
Wow.
And I actually applied for the course, and I actually got on the course straight away. So I started to study diamonds as well.
What was your exact aim at that point? De Beers, diamonds, you must have had a goal in sight.
Yeah, I mean, I was planning on trying to make as much money as I can, because, you know, I thought this would make me more happy, I guess. And so I wanted to learn diamonds. And actually, I was already working in Sierra Leone. I was actually shipping cars to Sierra Leone as like a side business. And so my intention was actually to get into the diamond industry. This was just after the war in Sierra Leone. But things actually took a U-turn, because whilst I was traveling in West Africa, I came across Muslims. And as I've mentioned before, my perspective of Muslims and Islam before I was a Muslim was a distorted one, to say the least.
Where had you got your information from on Muslims and the Islamic faith?
Well, it was mainly through the media, through the news channels and the misconceptions in the media. And so obviously after 9/11 and things like that, there was a lot of propaganda against Islam. And so I actually had a bad view of Muslims. I mean, I remember watching the American troops going to Afghanistan, thinking, yeah, you know, cheering them on, you know, thinking, you know, let's get them all, you know. And I had all of these misconceptions about Islam until I went to Senegal and Sierra Leone. And what happened was, my business, where I was actually sending cars to Sierra Leone, mm-hmm. I had no money, because all my money was tied up in my car. And so I was actually stranded in Senegal, and I had no money to stay in the hotel. So I spoke to the hotel manager, and he was a Muslim. And he said, no problem, you can come and stay in my house. Now, there was a bit of a problem at the time, because I couldn't phone home. I was only 18 years old. But I couldn't phone home, because my mother and father didn't know that I was in Africa. they probably would have killed me.
That's a problem.
So, yeah. So I had to accept the invitation as a Muslim. And I stayed with him for a couple of weeks. You know, he looked after me. He gave me a good view of Islam. You know, he had such good manners. You know, and his best friend, one of his best friends, was a Christian. You know, and this is the first time that I'd seen Muslims and Christians, you know, living side by side peacefully. You know, because all we talk about in the media is that Muslims and Christians, you know, don't live together. But this isn't the case. And so I was very interested in learning more about the cultures in Africa and more about the religion. And I was very overwhelmed by Islam. So this sort of began my journey into looking into the religion.
And this seems like a good point to take a break. You're listening to Heart and Soul on QF Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
Sometimes when the world's not on your side, you don't know where to run to, you don't know where to hide. You gaze at the stars in the sky, at the mountains so high, through the tears in your eyes, looking for a reason to replace what is gone. Just remember, remember that you are never alone. You are never alone.
You are never alone.
Just reach into your heart and Allah is always there. You are never alone.
You are never alone.
Through sorrow and through grief, through happiness and peace. You were never alone. So now, as you long for your past, prepare for your future, but knowing nothing's gonna last. You see, this life is but a road, a straight and narrow path to our final abode. So travel well, O Muslim, and paradise will be your home. And always remember that you are never alone. You are never alone.
You are never alone.
Just reach into your heart and Allah is always there. You are never alone.
Allah is there.
Through sorrow and through grief, through happiness and peace, you are never alone. You are never alone.
You are never, never alone.
Just reach into your heart and Allah is always there. You are never alone.
You are never alone.
Through sorrow and through grief, through happiness and peace, you are never alone.
Welcome back to Heart and Soul on QF Radio with me, Lauren Booth. Joining me today is the former jazz musician and author of several books, John Fontaine. Welcome back.
Assalamu alaikum.
So before the break, you had been stranded in Sierra Leone at 18 years old. You'd lied to your parents about where you were, and you'd stayed in a Muslim household, and Islam, through the manners of the people, had come to be not so obnoxious to you, shall we say. When was the moment that you actually made the testimony of faith, and how did that feel to someone outside of what is understood to be the culture of Islam? You were not an Arab, you weren't African. How did that happen, and what was the transformation like?
Yeah, well, after my trip to Africa, I began doing more research. And after a couple of years, actually, I started to really realize that Islam is actually what I believe in. And I actually believed I was a Muslim. I started to fast. I fasted Ramadan, the whole month of Ramadan, on my own in my bedroom, without telling my parents.
So you hid your Islamic faith from your parents for a while?
Yeah, I mean, well, see, I'd not actually officially accepted Islam at that point, because I believed in Islam, and as I said, I was fasting, I was trying to pray, you know, on my own in my bedroom with YouTube videos and things like that. But it wasn't until I actually went to Egypt to see a friend of mine on another business trip, where I had my first introduction to the mosque. And my friend, who's an Egyptian, he took me into the mosque, it was Hussein Mosque in Cairo. And I asked him to teach me how to pray, you know, because I'd been trying to pray, but I didn't know how to do it. And he said, no. And I said, why? And he said, well, you're not a Muslim. So I'm arguing with him in the mosque, saying, well, I am a Muslim. I believe this, and I fasted Ramadan, and, you know. And he said, no, you have to say the Shahada. And I said, what is the Shahada? You know, because I didn't know what the Shahada was. And, of course, in order for someone to come into the fold of Islam, it requires the testimony of faith, which is to actually declare and to actually say that there's nothing worthy of worship except Allah, and to acknowledge that Muhammad, peace upon him, is the final messenger. Mm-hmm. And it's actually this statement that brings you to Islam. So although I had an Islamic belief beforehand, and of course it would have been accepted by Allah, but officially when I took the Shahada, this was a different experience, because I remember as soon as I said it, I just had this feeling of being clean, you know. And of course, now I'm a Muslim, I know that when someone does declare the Shahada, that all their previous sins are actually forgiven and washed away. And this is the only, this, I felt very light, you know, and I felt very light and clean. And the only other time I've ever felt this feeling was a few years ago when I actually went to Hajj. You know, it's a very similar feeling, and we know that it's the same reward when someone actually goes to the Hajj. So it's a very interesting thing because many people have the belief in Islam, but it does require a bit more than belief. You know, it requires actually acknowledging and also
of course, and the
doing the.
And the activities and the actions of the limbs and the actions of the tongue.
Yes.
So the Shahada is the first pillar of the faith. There are five pillars, and one is to actually make that testimony that you accept nothing worthy of worship than one God and that Prophet Muhammad was the final messenger. I wonder, just in brief, John, before we end this episode, what changes did you want to make, and were you forced to make any changes? Did the halal, the haram police come and pester you to eat, you know, Dixie fried chicken?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was very stubborn in the early days of me accepting Islam, and no one could have even forced me if they tried, because I was quite stubborn in the beginning. You know, I was still kind of playing around with my jazz music and singing and in jazz clubs and things like that. You know, and it takes time. You know, Islam is not something where you change overnight. You know, it's a journey.
But John, can I just stop you there, because I think it's important for people to say, look, jazz inherently isn't wrong. People do nice things and they're in jazz music, and you listen to music and you're good to your mother. Why did you move away from your music, and how did it help you? What was that signifying? What was the importance of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was the important point was to actually let go of that part of my life. You know, I mean, whether someone views music as allowed or not allowed is one thing, but singing in jazz clubs with jazz dancers and jazz band and things like that is in casinos, you know, that certainly isn't allowed under any opinion of Islam. So I think as for me, it was hard to let go in the early years. Of course, it was my job as well. You know, there was a lot of, you know, it was my income, and it was a good income. So that was another reason. And it's easy for someone to say, you know, give it up, but how am I supposed to support myself? But alhamdulillah, over time, you know, Allah replaced it with something better. And that happened to be a brain tumor, believe it or not. And it was actually, after becoming a Muslim, you know, I found out I had a brain tumor, and I couldn't actually work anymore. You know, I had to take some time out for a couple of years, a good 2-3 years, you know, to actually to rest and prepare for the operation and things like that. So this was kind of, again, it was a calamity, what we see as a calamity, but it was actually, there was a whole lot of wisdom behind that. You know, it allowed me to take some time out, research the religion properly and learn more and step back from the old things that I was doing.
Final point then, John. Slowing down, looking into something other than physical achievements, fame, being taken out of environments where, you know, you can like music and it can do beautiful things to the heart, and you can meet people in different places and they can be good for you. But as I know, having been a barfly for almost 30 years of my previous life, there's a lot in these environments that is toxic for the heart. And we talked about celebrities in another episode and that lifestyle being toxic. How is your lifestyle fun today? How do you manage to be Muslim and enjoy life?
Well, subhanAllah, I mean, Allah puts the iman, the faith, you know, the happiness, the contentment in your heart. You know, he's allowed me to actually find a new journey. You know, and at the moment, my journey is teaching people Islam. You know, teaching people what I have actually found in the religion, and I truly believe, you know, this is the truth, and this is the way that people can gain true success and happiness. And so, yeah, I mean, now, you know, I'm focusing on just teaching people and trying to enlighten people to actually look into new things and look into Islam specifically.
John Fontaine, thank you very much. You've been listening to Heart and Soul here on QF Radio. Whatever your journey is, wherever it takes you, may it bring you peace. The producer for this series is Ihab Al-Sheikh. Assalamu alaikum.